Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at this year's Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm very happy to have Lisa Bodell with us today. She is the founder of FutureThink and the author of multiple books on innovation, including Kill the Company and her newest one, Why Simple Wins. Lisa, it's wonderful having you with us here today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So for people who don't know you, can you give us a brief background as to what you do and how you got started in innovation?
Sure. Sure. My background is I'm a futurist, which is a real title. You can get your master's in foresight, and I actually have my certificate in it. And it's my background was in marketing, but I found that I was really good with business and trends. So I really got to know the world of futuring and how that relates to innovation and change. And about 20 years ago, then I started my company, FutureThink, which has a team of people that teach futuring or foresight and innovation. So people can go out and do it on their own so they can be more innovative in their personal work as well as at their companies as leaders. So my background is now futuring and speaking and talking as a keynoter, but I started in the world of advertising, and I'll tell you how I got to where I am now was what I call strategic luck. You know, one thing just led to another that led to another. And, you know, here we are teaching and giving tools for change and innovation that are really provocative and different. And I don't think you would have seen me saying that to a teacher 30 years ago, saying I'm going to grow up and be a futurist, you know, but that's just how it happened. And here I am.
And what I want to talk about today is the contents of your two books, because they're quite provocative in what they say. They're called Kill the Company and Why Simple Wins. And this seems to go very much against what people think is required for innovation, where they think it's all about more ideas, more sort of company structure, innovation, like business units, everything. Can you tell us what you mean, first of all, by Kill the Company?
Sure. It's funny because I had to really fight my publisher to get that title. It was very scary to them. And I said, yes, but you know, provocative things sell books. So they went along with it. The idea of Kill the Company was, I think people need to be a little bit more provocative and give themselves permission to identify what's not working in a company. And the idea with Kill the Company is not to kill your company, but to practice what I call proactive obsolescence as a strategic platform. And what I mean by that is the exercise of Kill the Company is pretend that you are your number one competitor, and wearing that hat or perspective, put yourself out of business. And what that does is it allows people to have permission to have an out of company experience. And they are not just entitled, but mandated to point out what's not working so they can fix it and turn those weaknesses into strengths against their own competition. And I think that it's an easy thing to do. It's a fun, provocative exercise that's better than just idea brainstorming. And it's a better way to approach strategic planning, because each year's strategic planning, everyone starts out by, frankly, pulling out last year's PowerPoint and changing the date. That's how strategic planning begins. But they focus too much on, you know, their strengths and their weaknesses and their opportunities and their threats. And they fall into this political quagmire where they're trying to defend what they have versus improving what they have. And Kill the Company started to change people's thinking around how they should approach things and be more provocative about it. It's more productive that way.
It also sounds like it's taking into account this disruption idea with the actual disruption innovation, how it's meant to be, which is not being able to necessarily predict what some new upstart's going to do to change your industry.
Exactly right. So, you know, now, very funny you said that, Nick, when we go into companies and we actually teach, you know, part of what we do is training, and we actually teach people Kill the Company sessions. And we go in with leadership teams or intact business units to help them kill their own company. And if you're, you know, if you're good at what you do, you're allowing us to come in and say, here's your usual competitive set, right? The safe stuff, the people everyone knows. Here are the people that are adjacent to you, related to you that you might not think about. And here are the wild cards, the provocative ones, the startups, like you said. Those are usually the ones that scare them the most and they avoid. And we force people to, at different tables, to take one or two from each of those buckets. And so it's a structured way to force people to look at the whole picture versus avoiding the ones that probably scare them the most.
Have you got any examples of how this might work in practice?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we have people that have written us from, we've used it at Accenture, we've used it at Sunoco, we've used it at Merck Pharmaceuticals. And so I'm giving you examples, also small government municipalities, departments within our national government, the states. those are regulated groups, regulated industries that have figured out how to kill their own company. And I say that because usually people use regulation as the excuse. And so, for example, when we worked with oil and energy companies, one of their biggest issues isn't competing with other oil companies. It's competing with other types of energy. Or, for example, you know, oil companies, they're also convenience stores when you go in to buy gas. So that's also one of their competition. They compete with the Walmarts of the world, the Costcos of the world. And they normally don't think of it that way. So we help them change their perspective around other industries they needed to look at. Same thing with your consulting firms. You know, it's not just consulting firms, it's startups, it's crowdfunded stuff that they need to think about. So that's the practicality that we bring, or this exercise brings, when people look at killing their company.
And when you're actually going through the exercise, are there sorts of questions that you ask to help the mind think about how you might get disrupted or how you can then kill your own company?
Yeah, and yes. One is by bringing a more diverse set of competitors and actually mandating that people look at each of those buckets within, adjacent, and beyond their industry is how we look at it. And then we provoke them with a lot of open-ended questions. What if we, how else could we? Because most people think in terms of closed-ended questions. Yes, you know, are they a competitor or not? Assume they all are. Let's look at what could happen in the near term, long term, far term. What's the biggest threat that would upset you? What's the biggest risk that's coming out of it? What would be the best thing that the competitor could do that would put you out of business, right? What things do you envy the most about the competition and wish you could do at your own company? It's asking them the provocative questions that they never, right? It's not that they can't do it. It's that they don't have time to do it at their job.
And then the million-dollar question is, once you've killed your company, how do you innovate the company using those insights?
So what's interesting about Kill the Company is it helps you really understand where the problems lie. It gives you ways, you know, we categorize then all the concerns and we turn them into actions right in the room, right? We're very practical and we get commitment of what are the things we're going to tackle next, right? Near term, midterm, long term, based on their view of the threats. And then what that also does, it's interesting, it also, in the process of getting rid of problems, you create new opportunities. And often we'll hear people come up with new ideas for businesses because we've had this exercise. And that's what's really important is it's not just, you know, getting rid of problems. It's actually creating new opportunities that you didn't think you had because we gave you permission to disrupt. And that's what people usually don't get, is the permission to do it.
And permission is one thing, but I want to touch on something you alluded to in the previous thing you said, which mm-hmm. is the time to actually get this work done. I think that's the crux of your other book, Why Simple Wins, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny because Kill the Company was very provocative. But I tell this story about even after that book, you know, everyone says they want to be innovative. I can't think of a single company that says, no, not for us. They say they want to be innovative, but what they do is very different. I mean, we all know this, right? So the reason for Why Simple Wins is we were going out and training companies on, we have all kinds of courses, leading innovation, getting people to be more innovative in terms of thinking. But when we got to these organizations who had hired us to teach change and innovation, they often were not letting us do it when we got there, which made no sense to us. You know, they're paying us. Don't you want ROI? And what I found was they weren't scared of ideas. They didn't have the time to do it. And so the reason I wrote Why Simple Wins is because I realized what got in their way was complexity. Because I asked people, what do they spend their day doing? Because that's really what holds you back from innovation. What are you spending your time on that doesn't allow you to spend time on innovation? And when I asked people what they spend their day doing, guess what they said?
Meetings, mainly.
Meetings and emails. No matter who I asked and what country, what company. So what holds people back as an idea is it's time. And we are drowning in the mundane and we can't get to the meaningful because complexity is the enemy of meaningful work. And we've got to focus more on the work we do every day versus, you know, the culture and the whiteboards and the organic food in the cafeteria. All that stuff's great, but that's not what an innovative culture is. Innovation is the work you do every day. Culture is the work you do every day. And Why Simple Wins talks about how we've got to focus more on doing the right work. It's not about what's on your, you know, the things on your to-do list and doing them better. It's about what should be on that to-do list in the first place. And that's the area where most companies have it all wrong. Why Simple Wins hopes to change that.
Is that potentially because there's at least the way I've seen it over the last couple of decades, there's been this belief that the busier you are, the more respect you should get, or the more you should be appreciated, or the safer your job is. I think there's been this sort of I don't know what the right word is, but a fanaticism around putting in as many hours as possible.
I call it that we are addicted to busy. And the reason for that is we are, it makes us feel important, right? The busier you are, the more important you are, and the more valuable you are. So we have to change our belief system that we value more, not less. And no one is going to be empowered to simplify if what we're valued for is to do more projects, manage more people, manage more businesses, manage more things. So people don't feel that they are allowed, empowered, or will be rewarded for. They think about efficiency, and that's not being simplified. Being efficient means you're just doing more stuff, even if that stuff's not valuable. So we have to kind of change that mentality for people so they're focused on the work that really matters. And that's got to be a management shift in terms of mindset.
And how do you get that shift to happen?
Well, I mean, there's a few things that we do. First of all, it's defining what simplicity is in your organization, because people can tell me what complexity is very quickly. They can't tell me what simplification is. And we took a lot of time in this book to help people define that. So it's not just about being minimal. It's about being understandable. So clarity is a big part of it. People will deal with you more and trust you more if you operate with clarity versus jargon. It's about making things repeatable. So not doing things over and over again, making forms repeatable. It's easier to deal with your customers and making things more accessible. So you're not so siloed. So there's some key tenets of simplification that people need to define and make others aware of, because then they know what they can do to make something simple. And then the second thing is we tell people that they need to take away the barriers that hold them back. So one of the things we do is we have them audit their own work. We have them list on a piece of paper the 20 things they spend their week typically doing. And what they find typically is most of their work is low value work, not high value work. And what that discussion leads to is then how can we change those things to make them more meaningful? And some of the things we do is, can you really kill some of these things? Can you change the frequency around how often you do them? Are there other people you can give them to that should be doing them better? Or are there ways that you can actually automate or simplify that work? And we have techniques around how to do that. The last thing I'll tell you that we tell people to do is we have to have them challenge their assumptions around how work has to get done. And part of that is teaching them how to kill rules. So kill a stupid rule is a huge technique that we do with people that is liberating and immediately creates the space for change. And it's simple. We ask people what rules they think they should kill or eliminate. And if you ask your team to do that in 30 minutes, they will come up with dozens of rules. And I think that's one of the most productive things you can do, because to make innovation happen, you have to create the space for change to happen. Getting rid of rules is one of the things that you can do to do that.
So in my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the concept of simplifying a company is removing things that are preventing you having the time to do the valuable stuff.
Mostly, yes. I mean, so what's interesting about simplification is it's a subtractive process, not an additive process. And again, that's the mindset shift, because what we do is we typically value more, not less. And so it's we have to get comfortable with the subtractive process. And it's interesting. I think right now we're reaching a boiling point where people can't do anymore. And it's not that they're not efficient. It's just that they have too much on their plate that's not worth it. So we need to give people permission that it's okay not to do stuff so they feel like they won't get fired.
And I think that's one of the main pieces of pushback that I see when I'm talking to companies about spending more time in innovation. A lot of time when people are actually working on innovations, it's quite hard to prove progress and prove the fact that you're moving in the right direction. And that's what frustrates people reviewing work and managers. They can't sort of give evidence that good stuff is happening. If you're simplifying the world, how do you still keep the company happy?
So it's interesting. In both my first book, Kill the Company, as well as in Why Simple Wins on Simplification, why I have toolkits in each of those books. You know, I'm very practical and I want to create action. The tool in each of those books that people really love is around metrics. Both personally, as well as leaders. So for example, we have a whole tool on innovation metrics, and I'll talk about that. There's simplification metrics too, but the idea is there's soft metrics and hard metrics. And particularly when it comes to innovation, there's input metrics, develop metrics, and output metrics. So the reason I think that leaders are frustrated is because they're focused on the output metrics. Now, it takes time to get output metrics. So maybe what we need to think about is how do we develop input metrics, time spent on innovation, amount of resources developed, amount of money contributed, amount of leadership, sponsorship around innovation. Then there's the development metrics, speed to market, being able to approve more projects and diverse projects in the pipeline, balancing your pipeline, those types of things. And then there's output metrics. So a good leader has metrics on each of those areas. An educated leader will only be focused on outputs, and they'll be impatient because they'll be expecting those outputs far sooner than the ideas have been given time to grow and live.
Have you got any examples of where a company's implemented this and how it affected the way they actually approached innovation and their business as usual, shall we say?
Sure. Let me give you an example of HBO, which was, it was very interesting because they're a wonderful client. They're very innovative as it is. And here they're still coming to us to help them with a culture of innovation and being able to have more time for innovation. So we actually started doing Kill a Stupid Rule with them. And the reason why was they were coming, they have plenty of time to brainstorm. They have lots of ideas. Why wasn't something changing? And it was that mundane work, meetings and emails. So we worked with them to kill stupid rules. They killed hundreds of them. They put them up online, actually, because they wanted to share them with other people so they could also kill them. And they started doing kill a stupid rule sessions with their clients. So if there was a client that they were having issues with, they invited them to come together and have a constructive, formalized way that they could both take away barriers that were beneficial to both of them. And that then helped them create the space and the resources to implement new stuff together. So some of this stuff, you know, is an efficiency effort that can help you drive an innovation effort. And it's all measurable, by the way.
And taking it back to full circle again, then we've gone through a simplification effort. We've now got the time to innovate. Going back to what you said, how do we find out the right things to do? Is there any insights you have there on what yes. actually ends up bringing the most benefit to the company?
You know, what's really interesting is that people say they want to simplify, but then they have a very hard time articulating what they want to do once they have. And so that's where I really stick up for leaders. And it's interesting. So we launched recently our Killing Complexity course, which is people don't even know what it is and they want us to come and do it because they're anything to help them simplify, they love. But one of the exercises we found last year when we were piloting this thing was we had to help people identify why complexity is bad, because then that shows them how that usually is, it's individual crap we put in place that holds us back. And that's things we can control, meetings, reports, emails, et cetera. But also helping them define what meaningful work is. Because if you don't define the goal, people will fill that space back up with meaningless work again quickly. So once we have people identify their tasks and get rid of many of them, we have them define what their wish was. And this gets to meaningful work. If you have all this time now, what do you want to fill it doing? And what you find from people is it's fascinating because they have to come to that conclusion on their own is meaningless work or complexity is usually low value, individual, internal. Meaningful work, or where they want to get to, usually is external, right? It's customer driven, it's value add, it's growth, and it's inspiring work. So what that helps people is not just to find the actual task they want to be doing, but the type of work they want to be doing. And that's where they can start to have this code of conduct of, well, let's not do this stuff anymore. Let's make sure our value is on this stuff. And it allows them then to say no to the bad stuff and yes to the good stuff as a group.
So getting away from busyness and getting down to business.
I'm going to use that. That's good.
I'm more than happy for you to.
TM, trademark.
So we're unfortunately coming up to the end of the interview. But one thing I like to ask all the experts is if you've got something based on what we've talked about today that people can actually try out quite quickly, a tip or an actionable insight that you can do over the course of an afternoon, what would you recommend they try out?
Start them, There's a couple things. I really like, if people are having a problem with meetings and emails, let's change that, right? So first of all, I'd like to challenge people to start making sure they do no scroll emails. So if you have to scroll to read your email, it's too long. So I'm helping them to get brevity. In fact, if you can even make your email just a request in the subject line, that's great. Another thing that they can do with their emails is stop doing the CCing and the FYIing. And one thing that Merck did that was really interesting is they started doing a thing called NNTR, which when people were sending out something that is just low, not low value, but informational and not urgent, they would say NNTR, which means no need to respond. And that cut down by over 25% people replying, thanks, got it, you know, all those meaningless emails. The other thing I would say regarding meetings is make your meetings only about decision-making, not about information. And we had another client, actually Bristol-Myers Squibb, which is interesting. If the meeting is if it's meant to be informational, they cancel the meeting and they get the information out another way. If it's for a decision, which now is what their meetings are about, they don't have them until they know who the D is, the decision maker. And if no one knows who the D is in a meeting, they don't have the meeting until they can define the D. And the reason for that is if we're going to get together and make a decision, we want to know who's accountable and responsible. And it's a better use of our time. So those are small things they can start to do on their own at their companies.
Excellent. And I know you also mentioned that Future Think's got some courses that people can work on. We're going to get links down below this video in the description that people can go and find out everything. But where are these links going to take people and what can they find there?
So I would say a couple things. If they want the books, they can go to Amazon or some other places. And those have some good starter points for toolkits and tactics. If you go to our website, which is futurethink.com, you can get an overview of the courses we have there on innovation and killing complexity, as well as our tools, which are, we have a whole library of tools that people license and access. But in there are toolkits, quick win videos that are 90 seconds or less that people love, that give you quick techniques that help you start creating the space for change to happen. So those would be the places I would check out once they go there.
Fantastic. Lisa, it's been wonderful having you, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.